Franklin once said that an ounce of prevention was worth a pound of cure. But what if you need that pound of cure? Fortunately, I know someone that can help. Chris Vesely is about to tell you how to get things right when they've gone wrong and where you can get that ounce of prevention as well. I'm James C. Taylor, and this is Inside at Biologics. I want to thank you, Chris, for joining me here. So please tell the people a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Hi, I'm Chris Vesely. My background, I have a bachelor's degree in chemical engineering, a master's in analytical chemistry, and a PhD in pharmaceutical science. I've been working in the biotechnology industry for over the last 20 years. I won't give you an exact number because I don't want to date myself too much here, but the key points are that I've spent most of my time in industry as an analytical chemist / formulation scientist. I've had a lot of experience working with different size companies ranging from very small to very large and working at programs that were at very early stage all the way through late stage commercialization. And I have been with Biologics Consulting as a consultant for about the last 9 years now.
Cool. Thank you. And I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to do this. And the reason that I'm bringing that up is because it has to do with what we're going to talk about today. You have a client that is in trouble. And so how do clients get into trouble?
Yeah, and that's a very broad question. And there are a lot of ways that people get themselves into trouble. And I would like to say I only have one that's in trouble currently. But unfortunately, this has been one of those weeks where there are multiple issues and multiple crises happening at once, which keeps it exciting. But there are definitely some common themes as far as, you know, kind of how people get into these situations in the first place. And I guess the first common theme is a lot of times when we have our early stage programs, we're really focused on just getting stuff together so that we can get to that next clinical phase. And we're working with our heads down to some degree. And what we end up with is a situation where we prioritize the things that absolutely have to happen. And we don't put the time in up front to make sure that our processes or our methods or whatever other pieces we have are fully developed to a level where we can prevent some of these errors from happening. And then a lot of times, because these programs are moving so quickly, we don't necessarily have the time as we're going to look back and fix some of those errors or maybe fill in the gaps that we have created in those early program stages. Mm-hmm. And then you end up a year or two down the road with a program that seems to be running smoothly, and then you get a sudden crisis that crops up. A lot of times when these crises crop up, since I'm the analytical person, I see them crop up on the analytical side where you suddenly have maybe an out of specification that arises, or you have some analytical method that just you can't get any number out of it at all. And then you also see situations where you have a stability trend that just doesn't really make sense with what's happening. So when these things come up, the first thing that we have to do is we have to ask the basic question. The obvious, easiest question, as much as I hate to admit it, is make an error? Was there something that happened in the laboratory itself that can explain this? And the reason I hate to admit that is, as an analytical person, I'd rather it not be my fault, but it is usually the easiest place to start, because if it's an analytical method issue, it is as simple as, okay, let's see, did the analyst make an error when they were performing the test? Was there something that happened to the samples before they ever got into the laboratory? Is there something simple that explains why there's this issue that doesn't necessarily implicate the product itself? And if we can demonstrate that there was some error, that is the simplest situation, because we can invalidate the analytical test that was run, we can invalidate the result, we can retest, and we can learn what the actual result is. And that's a very clean story to tell. It gives us a reportable result, and it's something that will make sense to the agency and to ourselves later when we go back and look at it.
So it's not something that you want to have happen, but if it does, it is an easy or relatively easy fix, correct?
Yes, if it's a laboratory error, and the reality is that the laboratory scientists are human beings and none of us are perfect. And I think that anyone that expects that you're never going to have an error or an investigation is maybe kidding themselves to some extent. So you should expect that these are normal occurrences, and the FDA and the other regulatory agencies, they also expect that these are normal occurrences. And it's not that they expect you to have no errors. They just expect you to be able to explain how you investigated and how you fixed any potential problems, especially if it ends up being some sort of a training issue or other situation like that.
Okay, so if it's not the simplest answer, what kind of other things can it be that cause the issues?
Well, so if it's not the simple answer, then we still are going to stick on the analytical side, at least for the preliminary evaluation, because we still may have something happening with the analytical method. It's very common with some of our purity or impurity methods that as our columns age, they may behave differently, or if our instruments are not properly cleaned and maintained, we may see an issue there. And we see that actually a lot with some of the CROs who are running a lot of different samples for a lot of different people. Their maintenance may not be as frequent as it needs to be to prevent some of these issues from occurring. And I have seen that on multiple occasions. But then there is also the possibility that this is a very real result, and we have to address that as well. So a lot of times this comes down to, let's start by looking at the data we already have in hand. If we have an out-of-specification on a release test sample, how did that analytical run look holistically? Is it just the test sample that looks odd, or is there an odd result also for the reference standard? And if there's something odd that happened to the reference standard, that points more toward a method issue. But if everything else looks clean and the reference standard looks good, then we need to take the product results a lot more seriously. Similarly, if we're looking at an out of trend on a stability study, if it's truly out of trend, then that raises a flag. And is there something that's occurred that we can address that maybe would explain why this is out of trend? If it's just an unusual and completely anomalous result, then again, we're going to look back. Did something happen with that analysis on that given day?
Okay. All right.
But of course, then we have to take that next step of, if this is not appearing to be an analytical only problem, is there a potential that something has happened to the product? And that's where we need to be very open in our communication within our teams. We need to be talking to our process people. Was there something that happened with this particular manufacturing process step? Was there something different? Did something occur that was not expected?
Okay. So it sounds almost like a detective story here, where you check all the suspects and you get the information and see what adds up and what doesn't. I have to relate it for people who aren't as quite advanced as you are.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because, and we're dealing with a situation with a current client where we had exactly this situation come up, where they had anomalous results for release samples on a new manufactured batch.
Right.
These were within specifications, so just on the surface, everything was fine. But as the analytical scientists took a look at it, they said, well, this is not normal. So we started looking at the method. We did see that in this analytical method, there had been some creep over time where we were seeing a different distribution of the charge variance within the product across history, well, across basically the last 6 months, which is probably somewhat related to the analytics. This is probably a column that's aging, and so you're seeing a little bit different distribution. However, those differences that we saw, and we can focus in on the reference standard for that. We are seeing those changes on the reference standard, not just on product samples. But the differences we were seeing were not enough to fully explain this anomalous result. And so we went and we had a conversation with the process people, and we learned that on this particular batch, there were some unusual events that occurred. There was an overloading of one of the processing columns. There was another error on a different processing step, which at the time, each of these individual pieces were felt to be non-critical to the batch and were not likely to result in unusual results or an unacceptable product quality. But then when you put all of these pieces together, you do get a situation where the product quality is no longer acceptable, at least on paper. So we are still in that case working through the investigation to figure out how much of this is analytical only, how much of this is an actual issue with the product, and how does the client feel about whether or not they would ever move forward with this batch, would they put it into people or not? And as we go through the investigation, we're going to have to make that assessment of, is this safe? Is this reliable? Or is this a batch that is ultimately going to have to be rejected by the client?
Okay. Now, one of the things that my mother was fond of saying was that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And so when people get in trouble, you can help them get out of it, but you can also help them not get into it in the first place. So can you talk a little bit about things you can put in place to try and keep you from getting to the point where you need to be helped?
Yeah, absolutely. And from the analytical side, as I'd mentioned earlier, a lot of times we're getting things together as quickly as we can. But if we take some time up front to think through our analytical methods, think about what is the purpose here. And if we think about our history with these types of methods, we know that certain methods have common failure points, whether it's column life, other things. If we take some time up front to do some robustness studies, looking at, and again, with the example of a chromatographic method, looking at multiple columns before we really lock in our method. If we look at, for a potency assay, different incubation times, how those impact the performance of the method, and we kind of bake those into our method development programs, that'll not only help us to have a stronger method to begin with, but later on, if we start to see some unusual events occurring, we can go back to that original report and say, oh, well, this peak on this chromatogram is suddenly much higher than expected or is suddenly not resolving. And we know based on those early development studies that that indicates that this event is occurring. That just helps us down the road. So that's one aspect.
Okay.
But I think maybe one of the things that we lose here is the importance of having a good relationship with your partners and choosing good partners to begin with. And when I talk about partners, I mean your CMOs, your CROs that you're working with to help you through these programs. And a lot of that comes down to making sure that when you select them in the first place, that you've gone the facility tour, that you've done a quality audit to make sure that they have the systems in place that are going to allow for quality processes, appropriate investigations, and that they have the technical know-how to get through some of these issues themselves. I would say that what I've seen over the last, I guess, 5 years now is a very big shift in how CMOs and CROs are operating. In the pre-COVID era, we were going and visiting facilities on a regular basis. We had very close relationships with our partners. And then COVID happened. And there was about a 2-year period there where we didn't have necessarily the same level of access to get into the CROs to see what was happening. We didn't have the same ability to work with them on investigations because everything went from a face-to-face world to a virtual world.
Okay.
And while there are some things that you can investigate just based on data itself, there's a lot of times where actually having someone physically present makes a big difference because someone that is a true expert can say, okay, well, I'm watching this person perform this method, and I might see something that a relatively junior analyst may not be aware of in terms of technique, as an example. And the other thing that we see post-COVID is that a lot of our really experienced staff have left the industry for one reason or another. Maybe they've retired, or maybe they've moved on to other things. But that leaves us in some of these SAMOs and CROs with very junior staff. And so it's really important that as we are moving out of this era, that we as clients and as owners of these processes are going in and making sure that those CROs have our support to expand their expertise that they have internally and make sure that they understand our processes, not just general processes. And especially since we own these, we maybe have developed these processes to make sure that we're transferring our knowledge to them so that they can be successful for us.
So it sounds like the solid foundation for all of this is communication and learning, that everybody needs to make sure that they are effectively talking to each other and on the same page, correct?
Absolutely. And, you know, back when I was managing a laboratory, one of the things I always used to tell my analysts is the other thing that's really important is an open and honest communication. People tend to not want to admit when they've made a mistake, but it's actually much easier for everybody to get through an investigation if you just say, you know what, I think I might have made an error here, because maybe that error wasn't important, but if that ends up being something critical, it becomes also something that's fixable, both in the short and long term. And it'll make life much easier, and it'll make both sides much more successful if we can just have that open dialogue.
All right. So we're just about out of time. So what would you like to leave people with in the area of trouble and troubleshooting?
Well, I think that the most important thing to remember is don't panic. I'm a big contingency planner personally. And so I think it's very rare that you have a situation where the program is going to end based on a single error. There's always a recovery plan. And it's really about, let's look at the data we have. Let's figure out what the problem is. Let's figure out how deep this problem goes. And then let's really focus on the next steps, the recovery, as opposed to thinking about who we're going to blame for the problem, because we're going to get out of this. We're going to be successful, but we just have to be calm and work through things.
And on that note, I'm going to go ahead and let you go. And remember, everybody, be calm and contact Chris. And thank you for doing this, Chris. And if you do need to contact Chris or anybody here, you can contact us at insight@biologicsconsulting.com. That's insight@biologicsconsulting, all one word, .com. Also, we'd love it if you'd like our show, subscribe to it, rate it, and review it. The executive producer of Insight at Biologics is Chris Krahansel. This episode was produced and edited by James C. Taylor. The technical supervisor is Jeff Weiss. The Insight at Biologics theme is by Tom Rory Parsons. I am James C. Taylor. Thank you for joining us, and please come back for more Insight at Biologics.